Welcome to the R7 Christian Marketing Podcast, sponsored by Emma's Good.
R7 is an innovative, God-inspiring process that explores personal and professional purpose. R7 analyzes seven strategies to transform your vision and find direction in your organizational marketing. R7 establishes clarity and guidance for the gift we call life. This is my
destiny. Welcome back to the R7 Podcast. Man, today I have a good friend, ministry leader, man of faith, Bryce Johnson from Unpacking It. We're going to get into it today. Today's going to be a little bit different of a podcast. You know, more normally it's about marketing and R7, but today we're going to talk about sports and faith and how to win with high EI, with emotions. And so welcome to the podcast, Bryce.
Dave, so good to see you. I guess Dr. Dave, you're all fancy on me now. No, it's great to be with you today, and I'm fired up. You've had a big impact on my life, and especially as I was just getting started on the vision that God had given me, the role that you played was critical and paramount, and I'm very grateful. So love catching up with you, and glad to be on today.
I know we've talked over the years here and there. I bought your book. How long ago did you produce that book?
3 years ago.
Three years ago. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Time flies, man. Today's podcast, you know, I've been following you, even though we don't talk all the time. You know, I love what you're doing with faith and sports. And you can see that, you know, Bryce loves to collect figurines there. Yeah, that's awesome.
Every sport's so represented, I think. And they're mainly from the 90s growing up as a fan. Those are all the players.
So cool. I like growing up. So cool. I've got my original six hat on. Today marks a very big day in the calendar for sports. For me, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But 20 years ago today, the Carolina Hurricanes won the Stanley Cup. I was actually there as a season ticket holder. I've got pictures of that. Maybe we'll bring in some pictures of me being there as a 20 years ago. It's crazy. And so I got my original six hat on. Bryce has got his Carolina Hurricanes hat there. I love it. And so we're going to talk a little about sports and faith. And, you know, Bryce, you've been at this for a while. When you think about sports and faith, what does that mean to a player? You've had some really, really big players on your podcast. And, you know, what does it boil down to, do you think, when it comes to sports and faith?
Well, I think for all of us, if we follow Jesus, then our faith impacts everything we do. And so sports is an outlet for, you know, athletes to demonstrate that their heart has been changed by Jesus. And so when they approach going out on the court, the ice, the field, how they train, prepare, how they interact with coaches and teammates and refs and fans, they look at it through a different lens, and biblically speaking, and in regards to their desire to, you know, pursue Jesus and be like him. And now when I think sports and faith, and I also recognize that as fans, we watch athletes develop. Sometimes we'll start watching them in college and then they become better. And then, you know, we watch them throughout their career. And by the time, you know, the end of their career, it's like, man, they've really gotten so much better at this specific skill. We also have to recognize that Christian athletes are growing in their faith throughout their career too. And so they aren't perfect. They don't have it all together spiritually. They don't fully know the Bible. Yes, some of these guys are 23, 24 years old. And so they're learning, just like all of us, wherever we're at in our faith journey, you got to grow and mature. And so there's a lot of patience and grace that we have to show athletes too, not only from an athletic standpoint. Oh, how could you miss that shot? Oh, how could you not make that pass? But also, oh, I can't believe that guy said that. I thought he loved Jesus. Well, he does. He's learning. He's growing. He slipped up, and he needs grace, and he needs people in his life to come alongside of him and encourage him and go, hey, buddy, come on. You know better than that. What happened? Why did that happen? And so that's a long answer, but that's my take on it.
That's awesome. And, you know, you also kind of look there and go, this guy's making $50 million. How does he miss that shot? It can't be that hard.
It's true. It is true. We definitely feel that way.
Yeah. So I actually did my doctoral dissertation on faith with hockey players, professional male hockey players. And so it was a qualitative study exploring, it was a qualitative phenomenological study with 8 professional hockey players. And it was really just looking at their faith. And I found it to go in 2 different categories. It was their faith in a intelligent design. And in this case, they were Christian. So faith in their Christianity, that's kind of one path. And then the second path was their faith is their skill set. Like they believe and have confidence in what they do. And some looked at that as that was being faithful. Which I thought was really interesting dynamic of those 2 paths. What it boiled down to, though, is one of the discoveries, one of the attributes of having faith with their walk. And this particular, this is not for all athletes. This is a qualitative study with 8 hockey players. So it was just really kind of an attribute of this particular group. So I can't say this for all sports. But when they really like look at their faith, everything changed. And so I would love to talk about that today, what that looks like. And so when we look at glorifying the Lord with our talents and our abilities, you know, whether I made this shot or I have this car or I have this house or houses, it changes everything because it doesn't give what they do doesn't give meaning to who they are. Yeah.
It's good. It's good. Well, I think you bring up an interesting separation too. I guess they're connected too. But the idea, you'll hear a lot of players talk about, we have faith in our coach. We have faith in each other. I have faith in myself. And sometimes it is linked with their faith in Jesus. But oftentimes you'll just hear athletes who have, you know, just kind of faith in general. So to look at that and try to understand and get to the core of that is a fascinating, I imagine, study that you went through. So
yeah, so I'm a child of God. I'm a child of God, and I have a, you know, eternal life. I believe in Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life, right? And so that idea and that power and that strength doesn't define who I am. So if I, in this case, if I make the Stanley Cup or I don't make the Stanley Cup, it doesn't define me. Now, there's only, from what I could tell, it's really hard to kind of get a number, but of all the NHL players, there is only about 50 to 60 Christian hockey players out there.
Not 50-60%, just 50 to 60.
50 to 60, yeah. And it just in the NHL. I mean, that's not include the AHL, the ECHL, you know, some of the other leagues, but not very many. And so 1 to 2 per team, maybe. And so, so yeah, and I don't know that it's, I mean, it's definitely growing, but that's the number. And so when you're looking at the other community that's outside of that, it's important to them, you know, their family, who's, you know, some of them have strong Christians, some of them don't, but like their community outside of helping them walk that line, because, you know, as a professional athlete, there's a whole lot of identity going into your performance. And it's really hard to delineate that line when we're talking about, you know, how much you're going to get paid, because, you know, your salaries and contracts are based upon your performance.
Yeah. And I think about the motivation for these athletes, because they're motivated to be great. There's something in them that they want to be great at their sport. They love their sport and they have a desire to work hard. But when they really understand, to your point, their identity being in Christ, it changes everything. And when you see the guys that really take a step athletically, it's oftentimes because they're able to finally relax in who they are and rest in who they are. And it removes so much of that pressure, because on one end, yes, the pressure keeps you going. It motivates you, but it also can be so crippling. And that weight can be so great. And we see so many athletes that can't handle the weight at all. But for the guys that really experience Jesus and rely on his strength and power in their lives and go, you know what, whether I get the next contract or not, my motivation is to honor him, to glorify him, to rely on him, to make much of him. And hey, if I can go out there and I still work hard, I still work for the Lord, that he, you know, audience of one mentality, it does change things. And really it translates for all of us in whatever we're doing. If, because we do, we feel pressure, we feel whatever it is that's trying to weigh us down, man, when we can rest in the Lord and just work for him and not get lazy. It doesn't mean we get lazy. Last week, your episode was on lazy marketing. It's not about laziness. But anyway, so that, those are some other thoughts on that.
Yeah, you know, it's also interesting. I think we all look at sports because it's right in front of us, you know, like the Stanley Cup is going to be in front of us now here in the next, you know, four weeks or so. And so it's easy to say, easy to see these athletes, you know, these people, you know, but it's no different for you and I. You know, we relate to our bank accounts as identity, right? Whether it's big or small, our house, our car, new car, a boat, our size, you know, the size of our boat, you know, all that kind of stuff kind of all boils up. And, you know, there's pressure there to be seen as somebody in the community. I think we're, you know, we're just looking at sports today because it's day one of the Stanley Cup Finals. But
yeah, because, you know, I think what's fascinating when, whether it's buddies that I know or athletes, when their identity is in the salary number, that it's, I want to make as much as I can. And it's sad because oftentimes athletes will leave a great situation where they're thriving. They're playing well, their team's winning. They've got the right coach. It's like the right fit for them. And they want to go make $1 million or $2 million more because another franchise offers them a contract. They go there, they lose, they get injured, they don't play the same way, that teammates that doesn't, you know, don't gel the same way. And that, you know, you see this with just anybody. It's like, oh, you chase that job, man, just for that salary number. Yeah. And you forgot all the other layers of enjoyment.
Yeah.
And it's short-sighted oftentimes.
Short-sighted.
They want to be the highest paid player in the league. Like, that's always a big thing. Oh, I'm the highest paid, whatever position they are.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's kind of turn the corner here, and let's talk a little bit about toxic motivators. So I'm super excited about my next book coming out. It's coming out July 13th. It's called Plan to Win, How to Manage Your Fear, Lust, Anger, Pride While Building Your Christian Organization. Now, these toxic motivators I've sort of identified, and so they are fear, lust, anger, pride. So when you're talking about that bigger salary and that more money, you know, is that your pride or your lust that's getting in the way of your identity in Christ? What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's pride. I think it's the being recognized or identified as making that much money. And what's so interesting about sports is we know how much all these guys make. Right. I just saw this today. The athletes across all sports across the world, how much the top 10 highest paid guys, Ronaldo, $300 million. Wow. LeBron's on that list. A couple other soccer players, Steph Curry, $100 million. All these guys are $100 million plus. And so, yeah, they love being on that list. And it's like, at what expense for some of these guys? And then, yeah, it's like, hey, I want to be known as the top 10 guy, the number one guy. And it is. It's a pride. It's a pride driver. No question about it.
So, you know, you've been at the ministry for a while. Do you think that if your toxic motivator of pride is driving you in that situation, can you glorify the Lord with your talents and your abilities? Can your heart be centered on Christ?
No. I mean, you're making something else the main driver. And now, listen, it always gets tricky when you start talking more money, more money, more money, because more money does open up the opportunity to give and serve and help others. And, you know, talking about athletes, like, yeah, they can give money and the impact and influence that they can have with making that more money. Absolutely. That can be true. But then what it does oftentimes to the psyche and really the heart, what it does to the heart. And we know biblically when money becomes such the main driver,
the idol,
and we start loving money. And then we know when you love money, that becomes your master. And so it's like every decision then becomes about, okay, is this going to make me more money? Is this going to help my future investments and all that kind of thing? And, you know, there's a number of players in the NFL or NBA, like in the off season, where they're going to have to make decisions on their contract, and they can go play somewhere where maybe they can have a better chance to win a championship, or they can go somewhere where they make more money. And so then it's about that pride. And so when it comes from a Christian perspective, it's where does God want me to be? How does he want me to represent him? And is my focus on pleasing him, serving him, and making much of him? Or is it about making much of me and making as much of money as I possibly can? And I think it's clear that it is hard, very hard to do both of those things effectively.
So if we're saying that you're chasing money and that's your idol, having Christ in your heart is really hard, right? Like in terms of glorifying him, because your idol is money. And I think the Bible is pretty clear about that. The love of money is the root of all evil, not money itself. So if you're chasing that, that's definitely something that's between you and God, right? Like in terms of your heart and what you are really put on this planet to do. So can we transfer that to like, okay, the Stanley Cup final, I'm chasing this trophy. Mm. So now the money is one thing. Yeah, I'm on a good team, everything's great, but now I want to win the championship. Is that the same thing?
It is. I think so. And again, it's like it's not a bad thing. Like you want to win and you want to, you know, be the best and experience that fun. But what I've specifically, I'm close with the NFL and NFL players, and we do a Super Bowl breakfast the day before the Super Bowl. And so the idea of the weight that the Super Bowl carries and all of these championships, it's the, you know, similar.
Same thing.
When they win it, it's not as great as they thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Like you think that it's going to solve everything, or that it's this, you know, the pinnacle, the top of the mountain, and once I win that, and then you always hear these guys, and it's like the next day, we can't wait to win the next one. We can't wait to win the next one. So there's this lack of satisfaction in it, and it's always a little bit more. It's always one more. And so that's why it is so similar to money, because there's no amount. It's like, oh, a little bit more. And that's how we, as you know, the flesh part of us, takes over.
And so, this is interesting. If you ever study, Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah.
So the height of Terry Bradshaw's depression is when he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And sad. So, you know what he said? I'll fix it. I'll go win another one.
That's right. That'll solve it. Yep. Tom Brady's famous for comments along those lines, about, you know, not being as satisfying. That was like after his third or fourth, and he won a few more.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the flip side of that too, sometimes guys feel so empty if they don't win one. It's like their career, it wasn't complete because they didn't win one. And it's like, wait a second, did you go out and did you play your very best? Did you, you know, do what was ever in your control? Because many of these guys they get drafted by a team that isn't prepared to win a championship, and they don't have teammates that enable them to go win a championship. So there's so many factors. But from a Christian perspective, it's, man, did you honor the Lord throughout your career? And so that has to be your baseline. And so what I've found too is guys that truly love the Lord, they aren't concerned to the level that other guys are in regards to, I have to win the championship, I have to win the Stanley Cup, I have to win the Super Bowl, and that's my whole identity. If I don't, it's over. And then one other thing. It's also sad when you see the guy who's still hanging on to his Super Bowl win from 30 years ago as the most important part in his life. And he's not married anymore. His kids don't really talk to him. He's still chasing something that happened so long ago. And it's like, man, what is your life like now? Like what, how, you know, so that's the other part of it.
So under the pride is definitely there. Under the lust, toxic motivator side of things, this is rooted in self-worship and independence. And so what happens is it's very much a, you're hijacking the reward system in your brain, which is that cortisol dump, which in that dopamine. So what happens is you want more, you want more. And so just like somebody, think about somebody who's addicted to, I don't know, just make it up, like cocaine or whatever. It's not enough. They always have to have that bigger fix, that bigger fix, that bigger fix. And so the addiction cycle just never ends. And so this is what's happening when we win more and we win more. We're trying to up, we're trying to do more of that, that release, that pleasure of that dopamine of like, oh my gosh, I want to duplicate that over and over and over and over again. And what, as we know, what happens is you can't. And it's only at one time of the year that you can do it. And it's really, really hard to do. And so you get caught in this addiction cycle. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And yeah, I mean, you see it in a big way. And we as fans like fuel it. And I mean, I guess it's always been that way in sports. It's always about the championship, but it's been heightened in recent years too. Especially sports where like one player can make a huge difference. You know, if a quarterback or, you know, a key player in hockey or NBA, I mean, that those guys feel the pressure that, man, you haven't won a championship. So you know, oh man, it's all about winning. And then, yeah, you can't just settle after one. It's you got to go get another one. Yeah.
And so what I love, like flipping the switch here a little bit off the toxic motivators, is that Ephesians 6 talks about putting on the armor of God and the breastplate of righteousness. And so I love the idea of competing to glorify the Lord. So I want to come early. I want to stay late. I want to prepare. I want to get my repetition in. You know, I want to be the best version of myself so that when I do something, and this is really like a meeting or, you know, I'm into golf now. Like I just love to say, okay, how can I, with my actions and my attitude and my character, glorify the Lord? Right? That's my center. And the farther I get away from that, the more sort of not good I feel. You know, I feel icky about myself. Like I'm self-worshiping. I'm lusting over this possession. I'm lusting over this idea that I need this. I need this. I got to buy this. And I think, you know, from a marketing perspective, you know, the Amazon algorithm is crazy awesome in getting you to buy stuff. You know, and so I think this is a self-perpetuating thing in our society that these toxic motivators are out to get us.
Yeah, I mean, I identify with that in a big way, and specifically, think of the more monster that it's gotten me over the years.
Where the more monster, yeah, it's good.
Where you just you want more of something, or and I'll just talk very specifically and practically. So I've been building this ministry, unpacking it. Really, God's been building it.
Yeah.
But I've been a part of this process for now. This is our 13th year. And there have been certain times where I look at what we're doing and I go, man, we should be doing more. We should be doing more. We should be further along. We should be reaching more people. And on one end, some of those are good motivators. I want people to know Jesus. I want sports fans to follow Jesus. I want them to experience his love and his grace. That's a great thing. But oftentimes it's at the, what it causes is a lack of contentment, satisfaction, fulfillment. And I'm attaching my identity to the more, that if we have more, well, then that somehow actually makes me look better.
Yeah.
And, oh, look at what Bryce is doing. Oh, wow. That's great. And so, oh, we got to do more. Or the feeling of inadequacy where, man, I'm just not enough. Like I'm not doing enough. I need more. And so that then, you know, drives me to in a negative way versus God, this is your ministry. I'm open-handed. I'm open-hearted. Take it where you want it to go. Lead me, guide me, help me to be faithful and obedient and to be content with wherever we're at in that process.
Yeah.
And understanding too, that he gets glorified even when it's smaller than you want it to be, or it's not as further along as you want it to be, yet you're still trusting him, you're honoring him, and you're glorifying him in that stage. And it might never get to that point. And going back to the athletes, you might never win a Super Bowl. That might never happen. But are you going to be content in Christ and the effort that you're putting into whatever you're doing? And again, the obedience and the faithfulness, like that's got to be the focus.
Yeah, so that's
the hard way.
That's awesome, man. This brings me back to a study I did through my doctorate. In the back there, those blue books, there's a bunch of sports psychology, you know, case studies. And there's been several case studies. And this is not coming from a Christian perspective. This is just a case study on the science of being healthy as an athlete. They've identified as gratitude. When you are gracious and have a spirit of gratitude, you heal faster.
Mm.
You become more relaxed.
Mm.
You know, you're not as stressed. You don't have as much anxiety. And so I thought that was interesting that the science side of it brought in gratitude. And it's true. Like when we take time to be gracious, to be grateful, sorry, for what we have and where we're at, and just appreciate the presence of God and everything he's created, man. Things are just, you know?
Big time. Big time.
It's just easier.
Yeah, this is fresh on my mind because I did my podcast on this topic today, the concept of enjoyment.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at these fan bases, Hurricane fans, they're enjoying this, you know, run to the Stanley Cup, and Knicks fans and Spurs fans, they're enjoying this run. And you look at the athletes, when they really experience success, they enjoy playing together. They enjoy actually being out there, you know, on the ice or on the court. And what drives that enjoyment? I think a big part of that is gratitude.
Yeah.
You're able to enjoy life and sports and people and actually enjoy God when it's from a heart of gratitude. When you appreciate God, his character, what he's done for us, what Jesus has done for us on the cross, you enjoy him. And then when you appreciate people and you, you know, savor relationships and just, you know, have the grateful mindset of, man, we get to experience this together. And it just gives you this joy. And so even for these teams that are competing to win the championship, when they can actually enjoy the process, when they can enjoy practice, when they can enjoy even the challenges that they went through during the season that actually equipped them and built them and set them up to now get to this level. It just changes everything. And so I'm just, I'm convicted to enjoy life more. And you're right. Gratitude, it lifts you up. And then you know, I was also reading the joy of the Lord is your strength. And yeah. So when you actually have joy, so gratitude helps give you joy, and ultimately walking by the Spirit gives us the fruit of the Spirit, joy being one of them. But the joy, we have joy, we have strength. And when you have gratitude, you have strength too. I would connect those together. That's not necessarily biblically, but I guess you can find that in some sense. But man, because think about how when we're negative and down and talking about, oh, I wish we had more, or I wish this, or you get caught up in envy or comparison and those types of things. And to your point, the other, you know, pride and all those things, it causes us to be negative and critical and depressed and worried and fearful. Well, that we're not strong in that way. That holds us back. Whereas, man, we're grateful, joyful. Let's go. So there you go.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you know, it's interesting when you are grateful and you are glorifying the Lord with your talents and your abilities, I feel like the core of your positioning is strong.
Mm-hmm.
When you have fear, lust, anger, and pride, you know, and that's driving you, I feel like it's a weak position. Like you're looking for justification. You're looking for acceptance. And when people validate that, you go, okay, well, maybe I'm right. But deep down, you know, you know.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't right, man. Like, and so when I think about joy, I think about the opposite, anger. And what does anger do? So, you know, the opposite of anger is forgiving and patience. So in hockey, you know, if we're, you and I are skating up the ice, you know, and the referee's looking the other way, and you slash me in the back, you take your stick, we call it two-handing, like you slash me in the back of the legs, it's hard for me to say, hey, Bryce, man, I love you, brother. You know?
Yeah.
And so here comes anger, yep. Right? And so the first thing I want to do is I want to retaliate. I want to punch you in the face, right? And now we have, now instead of this person going to the penalty box for 2 minutes and we have a power play, you retaliate, which I call low emotional intelligence. Right. You've given into the emotion. You really have forgotten about the bigger picture of the team. You've forgotten about where we're at, in this case, the Stanley Cup Finals. You forgot about your glorifying the Lord, and you're taking your life in your own hands. You're taking the situation in your own hands, saying, I don't care about any of that. I'm gonna punch you in the face. Right? So yeah. You get angry, you retaliate, low EI. And so the teams that I've seen, I love your input on this, the teams that I've seen that win over the years, they're what's called high EI. They understand the bigger picture. They don't give in to emotion. They stick with the repetition. They stick with the process. They stick with the plan. And no matter what emotion comes along, it doesn't matter. They're in this sort of vertical of, I want to play above the emotion. As soon as the emotion comes in, that triggers that anger, that triggers that excitement. And really, just to geek out here for a second, when emotions get into the amygdala of the brain, the amygdala just kind of decides this is a fight or flight kind of situation. The neocortex is the what, where, when, and how. It kind of sorts like processes like information, like real information. The amygdala discerns the emotion. So when you probably notice this around people that are super emotional and you try to talk rational to them, you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this different part of the brain. What's that?
I've got a four-year-old.
Yeah, so this different part of the brain is just, who is the basketball player, World Peace? What was his name?
Meta World Peace, Ron Artest.
Ron Artest. Do you remember that? One of the biggest shakedowns in NBA history, where is that guy threw that cup on his chest?
Oh, yeah. Malice at the Palace.
And so if you look back on his journey there, he was meeting with a sports psychologist because he had anger issues.
Yeah.
And the story leading up to that, we should play this as a kind of a video so everybody can see it. But the story leading up to Ron Artest was that whenever he got emotional, the sports psychologist said, just go to a place on the court where you can relax and have peace with yourself. Like, just to get away from the emotion. That's why he went over to the scoreboard and he laid down.
Ah, yeah.
Because he was so... he was so emotional. He's like, all right, he's got to get out of this. So he went and laid down. And then that fan throws that cup of Coke on him.
Oh my gosh.
He snapped. And so yeah. Now the amygdala is on red alert. Fight, fight, fight. All the logical information of, I need to process, I need it, none of that. I mean, all of it just went straight to emotion. And all, you know, then it became this huge brawl.
Mm. Gosh. Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating topic. You're more of the expert on it, but to think about, you know, athletes that you respect that have had sustained success, you're right. They understand how to keep their emotions in check.
And stay in the moment. Yep.
And I don't think it means that you have to be emotionless, but you manage your emotions and can identify where you're going to escalate to it being a negative response. And I would even say, like, there are sometimes teams can handle like one player that may bring a little bit of an edge,
yeah,
a little bit more emotional. Sometimes he's the emotional leader. Sometimes even he just like Ron Artest ended up winning a championship with the Lakers because he was able to hone it in a little bit. Dennis Rodman won with the Bulls.
Well, so, yeah, there's lots of stories there, but go ahead.
Yeah, a team can handle that one guy, but when the whole team becomes that way, or it becomes so dominant, then it's hard. You can't really win that way.
You can't win that way.
No.
So let's talk about Dennis Rodman for a second, because when he was with the, what's that? He's right there.
Yeah, I've got the figurine somewhere, but anyway.
So when Dennis Rodman was with Detroit. He was a lunatic.
That was his first. He wasn't as crazy with Detroit. Well, that was his first team. He became crazy when he went to San Antonio.
San Antonio. Okay. Yeah. So he's with San Antonio, and then he gets traded to the Bulls.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
He respected Michael Jordan so much that he couldn't act like a lunatic. And here's my assessment of it. Michael Jordan had vision.
And Phil Jackson, the coach, too.
Yeah, they both had vision of where they wanted to go, and they wanted to tackle high performance, be the best basketball team on the planet. And Michael Jordan showed every example of that. Mm. And Dennis Rodman didn't have that in his life. That it's someone he could respect like that, that was truly authentic and being the best version. So this is where my book, Plan to Win, the name of it, Plan to Win, is that when we're planning to win, we're allowing vision to lead. And if we allow vision to lead and we're allowing a really believing in the vision, whatever that be for you and me, it's that Lord is, that Jesus Christ is superior in our lives, right? That we want to glorify him. That's the vision, right? And so when that vision leads, you plan for emotional things that happen. You have peaks and valleys in your life. It's not something that's going to surprise you. And so when this valley comes, mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, it's okay. God's in control, man.
That's right.
Right. Good. But if we don't have that vision and we're in the valley and the cup gets thrown, of course we're going to go bananas because we didn't plan for it.
Yeah.
And there's no vision.
It's good. Yeah. So to make this personal for me, you helped me early on as I set out to start this ministry with vision and felt, a strong calling on my life to do this, what I'm doing, to impact sports fans. And along the way, though, I've faced many challenges and things have not gone the way that I had hoped. There have been times, especially we have to raise money and fundraise. Yeah. And there have been months where we got down to the wire, needing God to provide. And there have been times when donors have either pulled their giving or said they would give and didn't give. And at times it negatively affected my emotions.
Yeah.
But ultimately why I'm still in it and still doing it is the vision has remained that God has changed my life. He's given me this calling. He's given me this ministry. It's ultimately his ministry. He's going to provide. He's going to keep this going if he wants it to keep going. And so it has allowed me to, again, be more open-handed to go, all right, God, it's a bummer. I don't like losing this monthly donor. This is a bummer, but you're going to have to replace him with another donor. And maybe it's some other way that he provides financially for the ministry to keep going. But otherwise, if I just, fly off the handle or I get angry or discouraged, and trust me, I've had those moments in those days, but I have to get back on track to go, all right, the vision that God's given me is still alive and he's still in charge. And so let me keep going.
And I'm super thankful for you and everything you've done in the sports community with your podcast. It's awesome. I also feel like, you know, like when we talk about our toxic motivators, everybody's got them. It's like stress and anxiety. Like, you don't eliminate stress. Nobody does that. You manage your stress with exercise, right? With eating right. Like, it's the same thing with fear, lust, anger, pride. You don't get rid of this stuff. You manage it. You be aware of it. This is part of planning to win, is saying, I've got this vision. I'm in a valley, Lord. It's okay, right? Yeah. I'm sticking with the vision. I believe what you told. I believe in the word. I believe in what we're doing. We're putting on a good product, good or service. You know, we're doing it, man. And of course, there's going to be valleys along the way. That's part of the fun of it, right? And I really think in the deepest valley is where he wants to see you glorify him. It's not on the, it's not on the peak, man. That's too easy.
Yeah.
It's too easy.
I always go back to the great sports example when Tony Bennett, Virginia, when they lost to the 16th seed in the tournament, and he was still praising the Lord, talking about the Lord in the midst of that loss. And that made all the difference. I mean, because he had been vocal about his faith before that. All right, lose to the 16th seed for the first time that ever happened in the NCAA tournament. Still talking about the Lord.
Yeah.
And then they go out the next year and they win the championship. So, but where was God really glorified when he lost that game? He's still pointing to him. And so, you know, the other thing, as we're talking about this and these emotions, I've talked about this with my life group at church, but we're going to experience even anger with the Lord. Like, we're going to have frustration with the Lord, and disappointment and discouragement. And the key is, are we going to turn to him and bring it to him?
Yeah.
Lord, I'm angry about this. I'm confused. I don't like this. I don't know what's going on, but Lord, help me not to let this derail me. Help this to not, you know, make me walk away from you. Lord, I just want this to draw me closer to you because I need you. I need your strength. I need your power. I need you to help me get through this valley and through this challenge and help me to, you know, work through and overcome these negative emotions, especially anger in that
regard. You know, over the years, people have asked me, say, well, Dave, like, are you saying that I shouldn't have emotions? And my position on that is, yes, you have emotions, but you've got to put them in the proper place. So when the room is really small, like when your room is really small and there's only one way out, that's an emotion that you've brought on, right? That's a thought that you've brought. And that really is the adversary. When the room has multiple doors and there are no walls and there are no doors, and it's like, oh my gosh, look at all the opportunities we have. That's God. Mm. So the emotional isolation and the fear and the anxiety and the stress, you know, that's a perception of the pressure that you've created. You know, a lot of times I'd say, okay, hey, Bryce, look around the room right now. Can you pick up some pressure for me? Right? Can you go buy pressure? Hey, when you come home today from work, can you buy some pressure?
That's right.
You know, and people, what my car, my wheels? You know, what are you talking about? Pressure is a perception of the environment that you've created. You determine the pressure. Because if the vision is so big and the room has infinite opportunity, there's not a whole lot of pressure. But when the room's really small and there's only one way and I have to do it this way, that's when you've created that pressure and that anxiety and that stress. And so this fires me up because now I'm in control of my fear, lust, anger, pride. I'm in control of my pressure and what I perceive it to be. You know, we have such an immediate society right now where, you know, it's like, you send me a text, I have to respond right now. No, you don't.
No.
You don't have to respond. So you can chill out and you can think about that before you respond, you know? And so, you know, if you spend a little time, I call it halt. Don't respond if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Right?
That's right.
Just take 24 hours, man. Now it's a little bit different. That's why I think we all love sports, because sports, there is, you know, there is time, right, on the court or on the ice where you have to perform. But my point of that is, at what level of the performance do you have to perform? Are you performing for this audience right in this moment in these next 13 seconds? Mm. Or are you glorifying the Lord in the next 30 years?
It's good, man. No, it's thought provoking. I don't know what else to add. I love that. It's great.
Yeah. That's great. So yeah, fear, lust, anger, pride. It's one of the top four toxic motivators that are prevalent with us. I love the idea of, like we think about sport, like right now the Hurricanes are playing Vegas, and I've been asking people, okay, Hurricanes are a very fast team. You know, how does Vegas beat a very fast team? Like, they know the opponent. Vegas knows that the Carolina is going to roll four lines and they're going to be fast. Like, that's what their opponent's lining up to them against in the next, starting tonight. For you and I, walking our Christian walk, I think, what's the adversary up to? Mm. How's he going to get us, Bryce?
Mm.
How's he going to get us? So if I know that fear, lust, anger, pride are his go-to, if I know that I'm weak with pornography, guess what he's going to put in front of me? Mm. Pornography. If I know that I'm weak with a bigger house, a faster car, more cars, more money in the bank account, guess what he's going to do? So I think it's a real fun exercise to say, the adversary is going to do his tricks, but I'm aware of him now. I know these toxic motivators are something he's going to use against me, and I need to plan the win. I need to prepare for it.
I love the concept, prepare to win, and just that word awareness. Like, it's such a valuable word, because part of it is, and I know you're high capacity, you get a lot done, you do a lot, but the idea that we live in this world where it's go, 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 it's on to the next thing, it's very hard to just be aware and be alert to what's actually happening, what's going on, and also what could happen, and preparing for what's to come. Because we are head down, go, go, go. And so, again, just that reminder of, wait, be aware of what's going to happen. As we grow in our careers and ministry and take the next steps, we're going to revisit the same challenges that we faced, a year ago, and it'll just look a little bit different. It'll be different. We'll approach it differently. But anger is going to pop up again.
It's going to happen.
Yeah. The lust doesn't go away, but let's be aware of, okay, this is going to trigger it. This is going to be an issue.
Yeah. So, now, am I not going to sleep tonight because of this?
That's right.
Right. Am I going to treat my spouse unfairly because of this? Is it really them or is it me? Mm. That whole awareness side is so beautiful, because you can go, why am I fearful right now? I don't need to be fearful.
Yeah.
Why am I chasing another $1 million? Life's pretty good right here, man. Mm. I'm appreciated, valued, and loved. Even though I can get another $1 million, is it worth it?
No, I mean, this morning I was aware, I was just having anxious thoughts this morning, and I was aware of it. And I was in just kind of battling, and realizing that, all right, yeah, I'm gonna do a podcast today. I'm gonna be on with Dave today. I've got a lot kind of going on. I'm going to the beach next week, so I have to get things done before leaving. And so I was just kind of feeling the anxiety. And what did I have to do? I had to pray.
Yeah.
I had to read the Bible. I had to pause, and I had to process that and overcome it. But it's a battle. It is. But you got to be aware of it. And I wasn't going to push through. I had to deal with it. I had to deal with it, because I couldn't just go do the podcast feeling that way. I had to come before the Lord and take that time to do that.
And you know what's really cool about that? I really, really appreciate you being transparent in this, man. This is really cool. That's a win. what you just described there is a win, because sometimes a lot of people are not aware and they just grind through it angry.
Yeah.
You know, so being aware of it, man, it's like, it just, that to me is like a blessing of clarity and direction and wisdom. And it's okay to say your spouse, I don't know if you'd say this, but you know what? I'm stressed out right now. Like, I need some time. It's okay. Let your pride down.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. Especially as a dad and feeling that pressure of, all right, I got to have it all together when I get home. But
yeah,
some days it's like, hey, today was tough. I need a minute. I need a minute. I'll get there. But give me a moment here. So
my kids are 20 and 22. And, you know, I purposely try things now so they can see me fail. They need to see me fail.
Yeah.
And see my reaction. Important. So like my last year was my every couple years I do something new that I shouldn't be doing just for this idea. So I was like, all right, I want to try something that I've never done. Okay. I want to be a sniper.
Well,
yeah. So
how about that?
So I went out to the range and I said, hey, I want to learn how to be a sniper. And he shot a gun before? Yeah, I've shot guns, shotguns, pistols. I have a bunch of guns, all that kind of stuff. He said, all right, we have a long range, you know, class coming up in a couple months. You're going to need to buy this, this, and this. And I'm like, I have no idea. Okay, sure, whatever. And I went out and started shooting this gun. And, you know, with ballistics, it's a whole nother thing. Like, you got to know the grain count in the ballistic. You got to, you know, how fast the bullet's coming out of the rifle. You got to, you know the scope and the wind. And, like, it's this whole thing. And I'm not very good at math. So I'm like, all right. You know, and I just took on this new thing that I had no idea, and I passed the sniper class. So I shot a bullet at was it 1,000 feet and hit a little disc, 1,000 feet, 1,000 yards.
Whoa! Yeah, that's legit.
Yeah,
man, 1,000 yards.
1,000 yards.
Whew. Good for you. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I think it's fun to try things new and you know, be in a position of vulnerability where you have to ask questions. You have to be humble before somebody else. Like, that's important.
Absolutely. And yeah, and just and stepping out in faith too on things that you can't do on your own, that you got to rely on other people. Ultimately, with very important things, relying on the Lord. Well, with everything, but I'm not sure you relying. I guess you were relying on the Lord to shoot that gun, but
yeah. So yeah, I'm relying on the Lord that the bullet didn't come back and smash me in the face or did backfire or some sort.
That is key.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing something meaningful if you are being challenged and you need people and you need God.
Yeah.
Versus being comfortable and just sort of stuck in that regard. That's cool.
So Bryce, I've enjoyed having you on the podcast today. We talked about some really tough stuff, man. Fear, lust, anger, pride, some taboo topics. I'll leave you with the last word here. Like, what do you think you took home? You're very, very open and transparent in this podcast. I really appreciate that. What do you think you took home from this?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and, yeah, just sort of unpack some of these topics in real time. Very thought provoking. I think just with the NBA Finals and Stanley Cup on my mind, and thinking about, you know, championships and our emphasis on success and getting to the top and all that. Just thinking in my own life, is it really all about that? Like, is it all about the mountaintop and the success and in what ways am I chasing that in the wrong way and just sort of evaluating that versus, just enjoying the process, enjoying the journey, enjoying each day with God moment by moment and being motivated by honoring him, glorifying him, making much of him and again, enjoying him each day versus being so discontent because, I got to win the championship, and whatever that looks like in my own life, which can just be all consuming and oftentimes kind of a negative approach. So as much as we're celebrating and we're rooting for the Canes to win the Stanley Cup, and I'm going for the Spurs and Wemby to win the NBA Finals, you know what? It might actually be a great thing for Wemby to lose the finals. the benefit that'll be for his long term career, and identifying some of that in my own life, and realizing even some of those moments of loss and failure, and heartache and disappointment have actually been great growth opportunities and learning opportunities. So there's a few real time thoughts for you.
Awesome. Thanks again for being on the podcast. I love you, man. We need to spend more time together. Dave.
Yeah, I wish we did, man. I enjoyed it.
Join us again next week as we continue to uncover the secrets to success with faith-based testimonies and the power of R7. Remember, destiny awaits, but time does not.